Okay, good afternoon. I think I got my Zooms recording. So I'm trying to learn people's names up here, so we'll see how I do with that. And assignment due on Thursday. Jira was looking at your assignment. I don't know if she uploaded them yet. She did. Okay, look at them. And maybe if you got questions, let's discuss that on Thursday. And if you want to talk about your grades, Gianna has office hours, so I would talk to her. But I can go over the key a little bit on what I did on Thursday. It's not really fair if I try to look at them because I didn't grade everybody's. Or anybody's. So we all grade slightly different. But I'll go over the key on Thursday so you know the answers. And we had lots of good questions on Thursday last week at the end. So let's see if you can ask me lots of questions today, that way I won't get through so much material. So any questions to begin with? And then hopefully I'm thinking about next week as for a, that's next week or following week. Someone's gonna be gone next, is it this week or next week? Someone, okay. If anybody's gone in the next couple of weeks, tell me. So maybe next week we'll have an exam on all this exciting stuff we've been talking about. Yeah. Okay, no questions. So today we're gonna talk about atmospheric water. So we talked about aerosols, what are particles on Thursday. Now we're going to talk about water, water vapor, phases of water, because water is what we're trying to pull out of the atmosphere when we do cloud seeding. And this, you know, there's a cycle to the water, so it doesn't get used up. Um, So basically most of the water comes from the land surface, or in more cases, the ocean. So that's why the Great Plains has a lot of good agricultural, because we pull up a lot of water from the Gulf of Mexico. So a majority of our water vapor comes from the Gulf of Mexico. But we do get some from evaporations from the land surface, and trees are great at releasing water in the summer. Okay, so pop up with any questions, or you can save them to the end. Three phases of water: solid, liquid, and ice. And forget that one. So my water vapor one, I'm supposed to have a squares, and my solid is not. So basically, you're supposed to look at these ones. So the solid is nice watery radius. The liquid are close together molecules, and the vapor is the one has the water molecules the furthest apart. And some of the terms we have ice, liquid, vapor. Ice melts, you get water, liquid. It freezes, you get ice. You have water, liquid water evaporates, you get vapor, and vapor, water vapor or gas, condenses to get liquid. So them are probably the ones you know. Then there's the other ones that you may not know. Ice directly to vapor is sublimation. And then deposition is from vapor to ice. So you can actually skip the phases, the liquid phase. And this all takes energy from one way to the other. Either evaporation requires some energy, or the condensation changes the temperature because the energy is released. So basic physics. So let's talk about each one of these phases. So the first one is gas, water vapor. So we basically have the three phases here that I give. We have temperature, which is typically what you think of, right? Summertime, liquid water. Winter, the water is frozen in the lake, so you have ice. And then there's a gas phase that exists when you get very hot and you boil the water, right? If you boil a pan full of water, it will totally evaporate into the vapor phase. But there's also the ones of pressure makes a difference also. So the pressure of the atmosphere around it. So, you know, higher pressures will force things to the different phases. So you can just change the pressures. The one bold point is that we talk about humidity, which is the amount of vapor in the air. And we'll talk about the different ways we characterize that on the next slide. But the other thing you should know is we got boiling point, freezing point, and then there's a triple point where they all three come together. And then we have normal. So we have normal freezing point and normal boiling point. So what do we mean by normal?
at standard atmosphere conditions.
Standard atmosphere conditions.
At sea level at 15 degrees Celsius.
Yes, but again, what do we mean by even at standard temperature pressure, you can still have a liquid that would be, say, at a colder temperature. Yeah, so that's a 0 degree point here, but that's normal freezing point. Okay, so we can have liquids that are super cool. Okay, which is not normal. So what do we mean by normal? It's a technical scientific term here. Normal is normal conditions, but how can we have super cooled water? Huh? Yeah, so what's abnormal about it?
Lack of
nuclei. Lack of nuclei, yeah, but so why would water not freeze? So when we say super cool, what's super about it? What's different? Yeah, because it hasn't done the phase transition. I need to put this on your exam. So when you see this question on your exam,
lack the energy necessary for the phase change.
So you got part of it right, energy. So so this is at the energy where the transition can occur energetically, or what we call thermodynamically. So it would be the lowest energy state. So water, you know, at this temperature, its lowest energy state would be ice. It's in thermodynamic equilibrium. Another way to think about it. So I think about it like a hill with a valley. Okay, if you have a ball, it could be up in a mountain, but if you give it a little nudge, it goes down to its lowest energy state. Okay, it will spontaneously go to that. Okay, but sometimes we can keep it at a higher energy state for a while. So that's what super means. It's at a higher thermodynamic energy state than its equilibrium or low energy state. So thermodynamically, it should go to the lowest energy state. Okay. So it's an energy state. It's this it's the lowest energy state, basically. Okay. So the water has more energy because it's super cool. Remember them, water molecules are moving. So energy is movement of atoms, okay? So it has more energy because the atoms are moving, it's a liquid. So I talked about super cool water. This is what we get in the atmosphere all the time, right? So when you fry and you encounter, we did a fright on Sunday and our P3 had to go back because we put them at about half a gram per meter cubed of liquid water for about 5 minutes, and the anti-ice system was not enough to keep their fright surfaces clean. So they were accumulating ice and they had a warning or something. And they said, yep, we can't be flying here because it's accumulating ice on the airplane. So we did a two and a half, three hours, I think it was. They went up the East Coast, got into this really good water over Long Island, and flew across Long Island. And that's all the data we have that was actually in cloud that I really care about. Then they went above, and we had no cloud data rest of the flight, and they came back. And now they are repairing the airplane to fix the issue. Hopefully it will be fixed this time, because they had this on the previous flight. But we have measurements, and we saw a lot of super cool water at like minus 14 to minus 16 Celsius. So it's 15 degrees colder than the freezing point. Okay, so it exists there. And it's because it's in a super, it's in a more energetic state. So it's super cool. So the other question is, what about the boiling point? So we talked about pressure, right? So you could change your boiling point if you go to up in the mountains, right? So it boils, it doesn't have to get to 100 degrees to boil because you have a lower pressure. So you could change the boiling point by changing the pressure. So this is one, sorry for the old units of millimeters of mercury, but basically this is one atmosphere. So if you go down in pressure, right, you will have a lower temperature. So water boil at less temperature. What about if you stay at this temperature, can you superheat the water? Can you get water to where it boils at like 101, 102 degrees? Now, yeah, but I want to keep the pressure the same. So the same thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to have to change the pressure. But is it possible to superheat water? I got one no. Should we take a vote? How many people say yes? Okay, I got about four or five. How many people say no? Okay, another question for your quiz test. Yes, you can superheat water. So just like you can super cool water, you can superheat it. Okay. So one of the things that we talk about is the nuclei are important to keep that energy state. So it's the same thing. You need nucleation points to make water boil. So homework assignment, go home and watch your water boil in your pan. Okay. Do them bubbles start everywhere? You gotta boil it very slowly though. Watch where them bubbles form. They form at nucleation points. So I've done this to high school students. This is a neat way to experiment to show. So I can put a thermometer in boiling water, have two beakers, one will boil at 100, one will boil at 102. 101. It's hard to get it too much super cool. I got to eliminate the nucleation points. So the way you do that is you very thoroughly clean everything. So a little bit of dirt, a little bit of imperfections in the glass is where the nucleation points are. So, and usually you can't just use soap and water. We have to use methanol, alcohols, different types of them. Should I try that?
The question, type of water also matter, like preparing like distilled water, so like spirit water?
Yeah, sorry, that's the other thing. Because you can't have the nucleation point, the aerosols in the water so much, so it really helps to use really clean water. Because that would give you nucleation points too. So very clean water and very clean beakers. And I've done the experiment. Maybe I can try that sometime. But
so to get superheated water, you need no nucleation
points. You gotta eliminate the nucleation points. So it's just the same way where you get the super cooled water, right? You eliminate the ice nuclei. So you want to eliminate, so what are imperfections? That's why it's hard to do it, because the glass and stuff on a molecular scale, it's not very smooth. So if you had a really great beaker, and of course you got to have the thermometer in there and everything. So maybe I can find a video, YouTube video that would show it.
So with no nuclei whatsoever, in the perfect scenario, but it's done, does the water drain just keep boiling or never boil?
It will, how do I say this? There'll always be some imperfection somewhere. So
is it like super cool water where if it reaches a certain point, you'll just find
it? Yeah, I mean, it will actually, I think it is. It's like homogeneous stuff. So you can't do it forever. I mean, it's the same thing. It's an energy barrier. Eventually, it will get over that.
So if I go to superheating, like the super cool, at some point, it will just happen.
Yeah, it will happen at some point. I guess I never really tried that, but it will happen. I mean, so anyway. That's an aside. So what we're supposed to talk about is how we characterize the humidity, the amount of water in the air, because that's important. So being a meteorologist, we have many ways to do this. The one being dew point temperature. The other one being the most common probably is relative humidity. There's relative humidity, absolute humidity, specific humidity, mixing ratio, and vapor pressure. So dew point temperature is the temperature at which, so you know what normal temperature is, right? So this is the temperature at which the water will condense to form dew. So you see this in the morning, right? In your grass and stuff. Or you can have a frost point temperature. So it's a temperature at which you got to cool the air to get the water to form. And this is kind of important because a lot of times the air rises. How high do we have to rise that air? Raised air until the droplets form. Relative humidity is vapor pressure over saturation vapor pressure. It's in a percentage, so 100% is usually where the vapor changes to liquid. Absolute is the mass of water. Vapor per volume of air. So mass is the weight of the water per volume of air. Specific humidity is mass of the water vapor per mass of the air. So this is really a cute unit, right? You get grams per kilogram. So it's grams of water vapor per kilogram of air. And usually we put these in grams because it's about 1,000 times less than the weight of the air. There's not much water vapor in the air. Mixing ratios and vapor pressure. Much of the pressure is of the air. Typically by the, in the tropics, when it's very, very humid, you can get 1 to 2% of the mass to be water vapor. Typically it's well less than a percentage. So lots of different ones. I got a couple pictures of how we measure these. So so my way to show and tell here, I went to the lab and so on our airplane, we have these sensors. So if you promise to give these back, we can pass them around. This is what you would see on the outside of the aircraft. A little bit of white here, we go through the fuselage, and then the air just comes in right here and circulates through here. So it's kind of like a static point on the aircraft, but it's designed to pull in the air. And we take off this blue block and put this one on. So this is inside the aircraft, and then we hook it up to the electronics. And so inside of here, you can take out your cell phones and look at your rights. There's a little gold metal piece on the bottom, and that's where the quote unquote dew forms. And then all we do is we bounce the light off of that. And the light changes if you don't have any water to condense or if you have water on that sort of surface. So you guys pass them around to do that. And now I got another sensor here, which is my little IMAP. And these measure relative humidity. On here, there's a temperature sensor on that one, and then there's two relative humidity sensors. And they basically are sensitive to relative humidity. We have other ones that can measure like mixing ratio. So what fundamental property are you measuring? So this is the one we're gonna fly on an unmanned aircraft in fog. So it just sticks out kind of similar to what we have for balloon measurements. And I can show that one. So it's dew point. But if it gets cold enough, remember I said the vapor can go from the vapor to the ice phase. So what do you think happens when you get very cold in that sensor on that little element? You get the ice to form, right? And so there's a little gold piece on there and the ice will form. So I know that you will get dew until about minus 10 Celsius. And below about minus 20, you get ice to form. But we really don't know what happens between minus 10 and minus 20. So I was wanting to do an experiment to see if we could look at that little sensor in there and see if there's water or ice forming. Okay, so we measure it. So that's the point of what we're trying to do is we make measurements, correct data. On what's in the atmosphere. So it's quantitative. So questions, maybe I should pause, not go too fast. So lots of different measurements of it. So equilibrium, that goes back to the thermodynamic. You know, water is thermodynamically at equilibrium above 0 Celsius. It's not in thermodynamic equilibrium below that. So saturation is when air is in equilibrium, and then we say with a pure plain water surface. Is it with saturation. So that surface on there is a plane. And then pure water is water without any dissolved material. It's just H2O, it's just pure water. Equilibrium is a temperature energy state. Basically, it means that on the molecular scale, there's as many water molecules leaving the surface as coming to that surface. Okay. So at the surface, there's always an exchange of water from liquid to vapor state or gas state. But there's just as many going into the vapor as there is coming to the liquid. And of course, there's no change in temperature with that. Okay, so if you have a phase change, the temperature will change. And then purity is just water. So saturation in air, if we say air is saturated, it's the most amount of water vapor you can hold in the air. And I like to think about this in terms of a beaker. So if you cover a cup or something, and you keep that water from escaping, you get an equilibrium. You get this saturated here. Okay. But you can also think about how that changes with temperature. So when you got cold at 10 Celsius, you can be at 100% relative humidity, but you have fewer molecules in the droplet. So you got fewer of these lower vapor pressure, fewer molecules in the air. But if it's warmer, it can hold more water vapor. Okay. So scientists come up with a equation, Clapeyron equation. And so we go into great details on this. And I'll show you the equation. Oh, I should have put the variables. I'm sorry. Next time I add what ES is the saturated vapor pressure. Mix and ratio with respect to vapor. Then you got L and R, two constants, latent heat. And the gas constant, and then P, that's a molecular MS. So basically, you have this saturation vapor pressure here, and all these other terms, R, L, and MV, are all constants. So the only two variables are T and the vapor pressure. So when you have two variables and a bunch of constants, they change together. So as one changes, the other one doesn't. And this is a natural log. Okay. If this was just without this natural log, we just have a linear relationship. But because there's a natural logarithm in there, basically the more vapor you have, the more it changes. So it changes very quickly. So there's a lot of these type of relationships in nature. Okay. The main thing to remember with this equation is what was illustrated here. What temperature? You get a higher saturation vapor pressure. The other thing to remember is that it's not linear. We call it exponential. Okay. Warmer air can hold more water. And it can hold a lot more water. It's not a linear relationship, it's an exponential. So it grows faster with temperature. So that's important. And then I just end with emphasizing that we have three states, vapor, liquid, and solid. You take heat to change from one to the other at the same temperature, then heat of fusion, then heat of vaporization. So it takes energy to just go from one to the other. So when you have on your aircraft wings, sometimes we heat them, right? You're not necessarily raising the temperature, all you're doing is changing the phase, but that tail takes energy. So energy and vapors have more energy. Gases have more energy than the solids do, even if they're at the same temperature. So energy is a movement of atoms. Okay, questions? So, you know, like on your airplane, you know, if you have the water droplets, they're super cool. So that means they're not in its lowest energy state. And if they hit your aircraft surface, your wings or something, that will then trigger the transformation from water to ice. It gives it a little kick to get over the energy barrier, and then it goes to its lowest energy state. Okay, it won't go from ice to vapor because you're going against its lowest energy state. But if it's not in its lowest energy state, it can very quickly change to that by inducing something that kind of kicks it over the hill, for example. So your super cooled water in the atmosphere, when it hits your aircraft surfaces, they got a bunch of nuclei, a bunch of things. But even at the aircraft surfaces, right, they don't necessarily freeze right at zero. So you can be in super cooled water or a little bit and not have it freeze on your surfaces. And there's actually a difference. A lot of times we have ice detectors on your aircraft, right, that detect if you're in there. And I should bring one. But they're with a vibrating rod. So with a rod, is that really the same as your aircraft surface? And it's slightly different. But slightly is a couple tenths of a degree or half a degree. You know, it doesn't really matter that much. But they don't actually necessarily freeze right at zero. But that's the thermodynamic one. Does that kind of answer your question? It forces the phase change. It's kind of like having a water molecule at the top of the hill. And then if it hits the surface, it forces, it just gives it a little kick to get it start rolling down the hill. And once the energy gets going in, it would just go to its lowest energy state. So I like to think of it as a ball, and then you kick it. You know, it can be on a little now and not roll over the hill. But if you give it a little bit of a start, it would then change.
Could that phenomenon be described with like potential energy versus energy in a way?
Yeah, I mean, that's the analogy when you have the change. Yeah, I mean, potential energy. It's an energy. It's a transition of energies.
Like it's obviously an energy release, right?
Well, yeah, because you're going to take the higher energy state and put it to a lower energy state. So that release of energy, where does that go?
Into the environment.
Yeah, into the atmosphere. So then you can warm up the atmosphere. Okay, so energy is not destroyed, it's just transferred. So
so like super cooled liquid water will maintain all of its energy, like even if it's brought down to a cold temperature, it will maintain its energy until it freezes?
Well, it's the latent heat. So this latent heat, okay, this changes, let's see, I'm gonna go, this energy stored in that state of matter. Okay. And so that, but there's also energy just because of its temperature.
Okay, so
there's two different types of energy. One's in the molecule.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes more sense.
So it's it's stored in the configuration of the atoms.
Yeah.
So the atoms in the gas stage have more energy, even at the same temperature. So it's an energy. And that's why I'm trying to illustrate here. If these are all at the same temperatures, you know, the vapor would have more energy. And you can't destroy the energy, so it has to go into something. So that change doesn't go into the atmosphere, goes into the configuration of the atoms. So, but in a practical sense, you can just think of the fact that we do have super cool water. You know, you have to deal with it. It, you know, if you're flying through it, you have to understand that it does exist. And the reason it does exist is that you can't have things in higher energy states. There's not any nuclei there. So, okay, I'll stop. Any other questions? We're gonna break here. Because we are talking, so we talk about water and we talk about nuclei, which are what aerosols in there. And I kind of been talking about these cloud condensation nuclei and ice nuclei, which are really defining what they are, except they help go between these energy states. So we'll talk about nucleation a little bit more in the next lecture. But we're talking about the aerosols. So I was going to show you, hopefully I can get this up, some measurements of these. So one of the things we want to do is if I go to my MET trailer here, so we measure these were instruments. So I'll pull this up and show you some, but my instrument's not working. I just sent an email to the technician. Oh, I remember my email address and my password. Let's see if I can get this working. Hey, let me log in. I didn't want to do that one first. Well, this is fine. This is today's measurements down in Fargo. And I'll tell you a little bit how we make these measurements and stuff in the lecture, but You see what's on the x-axis is time, and this is the last 24 hours. And sorry, this is UTC or GMT, universal time. So its offset is the time in at the meridian available. So 14, you have to subtract 5, and then it's military time. So 2 o'clock will be the 20 zoo on here. So so one of the things, and this is the last 24 hours if you go back in time. And that's on the x-axis, and the y-axis is number concentrations in number per cubic centimeter. So it's the number of aerosols, number of cloud condensation nuclei that are occurring. And we talked about relative humidity. So there's all these waves that go up and down in here. That's because we're changing the relative humidity in the instrument. But if I'm going to create water droplets, which is what I'm doing in this instrument to make CCN, we have to get it above 100%. So don't worry too much about the waves. Just worry that last night it was lower, below 500. And then today it's higher. So we go up from below 500 number per cubic centimeter to above 1,000. Okay. The numbers don't really matter, but we see these changes. Typically, a lot of times you have higher concentrations in the day. So we can measure it, we can quantify it, we can see how things change. Okay, so these are the ones, basically, this is measuring basically aerosols that cloud droplets form on. Okay, I'll show you another one here, if I can. That is, we have another instrument that basically measures all the particles, and it's not working now. But I can go back in time and look at the last 6 months and select out a period in time back in. Right before Christmas. And here we have measurements that some of these low values are like 5,000, 6,000. And these are the same units. And they go up to something like 40,000, 50,000 number per cubic centimeter. So this is a huge number compared to the hundreds that we had before. Okay, just remember them numbers. You know, it was 500 and now it's maybe 50,000. So these are all the particles in the atmosphere. The other ones are just what forms the clouds. Okay, so the next lecture is all about the total number of aerosols, which is what this is. The cloud condensation nuclei, which was the previous measurements, and then the ice nuclei out in the atmosphere. So these are real-time measurements in Fargo. And again, we can quantify them. So, what's my next slide? Okay, so let me hide this. And let's type. Get rid of this here. Okay, we're going to try to combine particles and water vapor. So the idea of water, the idea of these particles in the nucleation. So what I just showed you was a measurement of the number of these aerosols, the total number of aerosols. Sometimes they refer to condensation nuclei, to a volume. So a volume has three dimensions. So in this case, you can take 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter. And if you count up all the little dots in there, you should get 24 of them. So that means there's 24 number per cubic centimeter. So sometimes you put the number sign and a slash per cubic centimeter. Other times we just forget that we're talking about numbers and it's just in pride. And we just put cm to the minus 3. So because it's 1 over, so that's why you have the minus sign. So that's what we talk in terms of the number of these particles that we talked about last Thursday. Then we talked about water vapor. This is my little representation of that water in a cup or in a room. Okay. These are very small molecules of water. And I don't have it to scale. These are a lot smaller than the aerosols. Okay. Aerosols are 10 nanometers to hundreds of thousands of nanometers in size. But the molecules of water are, you know, tenths of a nanometer or hundredths of a nanometer. So they're on the size of the atoms. They're very small. There's another question for the exam, which is bigger, water molecule or an aerosol? The water molecules, the vapor molecules themselves, are a lot smaller. We say molecules because it's made up of hydrogen and oxygen atoms. Okay, the other key concept is relative concentrations. So remember, I just showed you measurements from a condensation particle counter, which was measuring aerosols. So that's measuring the purple here. Them numbers were what? Yeah, that's the size, but what's the concentration? How many? Well, that was my example, but before that, I'll have to go back to show you. Right here. So these are the concentrations on the x-axis, and this is time. So I got it on here right now on this point is measuring 33,709 number of particles per cubic centimeter. So tens of thousands of these. These are all the particles. Okay, and then now I'll go pull up another one here. Oops, cancel. If I show you the CCN measurements, the crowd condensation nuclei, you know, these are on an order of hundreds to thousands. Okay, so I'm trying to illustrate that difference between hundreds and tens of thousands of these by looking at a relative amount of them. So the size of the circle here of the purple is the crowd condensation nuclei. And the the purple is the condensation nuclei. These are all the particles larger than 10 nanometers. That was what's shown. And it changes in time. But no matter what it is, it's always huge. Okay? But a subset of them, the auto-crowd conversation you got. Okay? Think of this as, let's say, college students, a subset of the whole population. Right? So if you took everybody in Grand Forks, you have a huge number of people, like 50,000. But we only have, you know, 10,000 or so students. And then you could refine that smaller. So you can, it's a subset. It's part of the bigger picture. So the numbers don't really matter. The concept here is that the crowd conversation nuclei are a lot smaller. Okay. And then we have these ice nuclei. These are what helps form ice. And they're even smaller yet. So they're a subset though of the bigger ones. Okay. So that's a key concept to think about. So we can go through all this stuff about nucleation and talking about this, but it's a key concept to remember. So I ask you about something like this on the test, and I hope that you remember this in 5 or 10 years when you go, or this summer, or sometime when you're talking about this. But the details about how we exactly measure these with these instruments, I can tell you a little bit about how we measure them, but I don't expect you to remember that. Okay. So we have these instruments like these, and that's what's measuring it down in Fargo. They're called a crowd condensation Eucharist counter. And they work. Let me get rid of my. But taking air in. So we have a stack on top of the trailer, bring the air particles in. And these little aerosols we can't see. And they're in a saturated environment, but they're saturated with respect to alcohol. And as they're saturated, they get bigger. And then we have a little laser, kind of like our razor pointers. So the laser pointer is up here. And the instrument, so here's the little laser. And we can count every one of them, tens of thousands of particles. Okay. So, you know, we saturate the environment, we count them. There's a lot of more details. And some of it has to do with changing the temperature. We saturate it and then we cool it down to force the phase change. So the idea is, is that we grow a particle that's not seen. So something very small in the super environment and grows big enough so that you can detect it or see it.
Does it grow because like more things are attaching onto it, or does
it say
that's other?
What's attaching onto it is vapors. So we can, in the crowd condensation nuclei counter, we condense water. So it's water vapor. And this one, because it's so small, to create the environment, we use alcohol or butanol. It's a type of alcohol. And maybe on Thursday, I'll bring you my bottle. And you can smell it. Like if I open it, the cap, you'll smell it throughout this whole room. So that vapor goes around. Okay, just like the water does. But it's a type of alcohol. Okay, so that vapor is condensing and growing on these particles. So it's the gas, it's the molecules of a particular compound. So we got to grow them. Okay. And we do that by creating a super saturated environment, an environment where we force the gas to condense. Okay. And we can do that with alcohol for very small particles. But what we're really interested in is water. So we can do the same thing by condensing water on these aerosols. And that's exactly what happens in the clouds to form the droplets. But the difference is, there's a hygroscopic substance. There's hygroscopic, that means it likes water. Okay? It will take that water up. There's hydrophobic. Phobic means a fear, it doesn't like it. That it doesn't like the water. Okay. So things like sodium chloride and ammonium sulfate like water. Okay, so this is the other thing you can do. Take and put some salt on your table and put some drops of water. Or put a little drops of water and then put salt. The salt will absorb that water and make droplets because it likes the water. Also, typically larger particles are good CCN. So 10, 20 nanometer particles are just not big enough that they really have an affinity, a likeness to the water vapor. So sources, we talked a little bit about sources of aerosols, dark smoke, and particles can condense to form these CCN. But one of them is sodium chloride. So where do you think a lot of, remember from Thursday, where does a lot of sodium chloride come from? The ocean. So the ocean's there, right? So I love swimming in fresh water, right? But you go swim in the ocean, right? You don't want to swallow that water. You don't want to get on your lips because you feel that, you taste that salt. So how do we get it from the ocean back into the atmosphere? You can do these bubble breaking, and the ocean water and the bubbles break for this. Okay. Let me show you one video maybe if I can find, if my videos work on here. So, and you can look at these, they actually do form water particles.
If this works. Now let's try this one.
So this is a water surface, and you see there's a point there where it started with the, what arrow they point out to, location of the nuclei site. So if you watch the video, it starts to freeze from that one point. And they can zoom in on this, and you can watch that it freezes from one point and moves outward. So this is that nucleation. It's a start. But once it starts, then it really spreads. So it's really a one site, one location to do this. And this is one of the things that why crowd seeding works is because you put very small particles that do stuff on a very small scale, but has a bigger effect on these. So, let's see if I can get all of this. So you can see these nucleation points, and there's some other videos if you want to go work, look at to see how the droplets and they could freeze, they could change and emit from the ocean. You can have these little bubbles that form and break. And you can have little areas where the droplets can freeze, or have areas that freeze and start. Like the condensation nucleus particle, we have one of these crowd condensation nuclei counters in Fargo, and that's where the data comes from. There's two types, expansion and gradient diffusion chambers. So we can sit here and I can talk about how this instrument works for hours and hours. So this is one of my favorite instruments, but you really don't need to, you know, quiz you on exactly how it works. The idea is that we can change temperature and saturation vapor pressure, and they're not the same. So we can supersaturate the environment with changes in temperature. A linear change in temperature can create a supersaturated environment. Because remember from the Krasny-Krapyrov equation, that's a exponential equation. And we can basically do this inside a nice confined space where we have a flow of air and we can control the environment. So the idea is we have these instruments where we can be very precise and control the temperature, relative humidity in the air. And that's what was being done, is the supersaturated environment. When you go back, rise and fall is because what I'm doing is I'm changing the amount of the relative humidity. So I'm condensing, I'm forming more crowd condensation nuclei because the humidity is higher. Okay. And just like I can have super cooled water, super heated water, I can have super saturated conditions. We always use super. It's above saturation. So 100% is with thermodynamic equilibrium, but we can create environments where it's above that saturation point. And how much above is what's changed in this instrument. So your crowds form at different supersaturations. You get more particles in a very energetic thunderstorm where you got supersaturated conditions compared to a nice slow reforming stratus broad rain event place. So if you go through the crowds, you got a big updraft. That's the center of the storms. That's where you have the most supersaturated conditions. So we can change that. Let me finish so we want to grow these droplets, but this growth, it depends. You say slightly supersaturated above 100%. That means we're going to about 101% supersaturation. That's what the slight means. And again, the equilibrium values are from pure water with the quasi crack rock. So it's thermodynamic equilibrium. So if you have a water molecules at surfaces, if they're curved, they can escape more easily with them. So if you have a very small surface, the water molecule can very easily escape. So that's why you need bigger particles to start. So the, one of the things that makes us a sphere. So if you think about it, the water particles helps to form that water sphere to begin with. And that helps to form that droplet because you got to have the water, and the water is going to form a sphere. Because it can't stack horizontally because then what's underneath, it's not, the spherical surface is the most lowest energy state. The other thing is if you have water salt particles in there, it helps to keep that water into the droplet. So a lot of times the droplets, once they form, they dissolve the salt particles. So there's a couple of facts that we know about and we can very accurately determine how the particles form these droplets. So curvature. It goes by a factor 1/r. So small droplets have a difficult time from evaporating, but when they get bigger, it's harder for them to evaporate. It's more like a plane parallel surfaces. So one of the things that make good cloud condensation nucleus, in some ways ice too, is just having big particles. So that's one of the things when we do seeding is we want a big particle, not necessarily about the small ones that won't have an effect. Right. So we can stop there because the final topic will be ice nuclei to form ice. So we got aerosols, we got form water droplets, and now to form ice. So if we can form the ice, it's a lot more efficient to make precipitation. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any questions? While you're packing up. Yeah, I'll have some study thing. So I hope to put that together by Thursday. So, and the best way to study, if they did research on this, please, if you look at my notes, my things, don't do that. Don't read the book, don't read articles, don't watch my videos. What's the best way to study? Well, groups work, but what do you do in the groups?
Ask questions.
Questions. So ask questions and answer the questions. So that way you'll be done studying a lot faster. Just ask yourself questions and try to answer them. But that's what the exam is. So skip right to that and I'll give you questions. Oh, when I get my instruments back. Thank you. Okay. I forgot about these. Hey. Yeah, they said there was a couple that were blank. Okay, did you send it to me or Julie? Okay, I need to send it to Julie because I'm not sure that I got it too. So Yeah. Can you send it directly to Drew, the TA? I think her email should be on the syllabus.
I'll do that, but I think that the application looks like they have to make sure
that. Yeah, I mean, you could forward the sent one if you want to, and then you can CC me on it. Yeah, because she said there was a couple, two people, and I'm not sure why that happened. She said two people had that problem, so I'll email her back too, and I'll try to find it. I'm just really behind on my emails right now.
Okay.
So. I'm thinking next week, probably on Thursday. I'm thinking. I think we have enough material. Maybe we get through this ice nucleation point. That'd be a good stopping point. So I'm hoping that I have a study guide on Thursday and we can go over the assignments. And you got the other assignment due.
Also, I'm assuming you have to be in class.
Yeah, so that's, that was the other question I was gonna ask. So you guys can all bring laptops, right? We just do it online, or do you, is that usually what the professors do? I haven't done this.
Normally it depends on professors.
Yeah.
Sometimes they prop to you.
Yeah.
If they're totally online.
Yeah.
This is a hybrid.
So I was just gonna do in class at the time.
Oh, is it a quiz or exam?
Well, it'd be like an exam. So I was thinking multiple choice and short answer type of stuff. So, and I don't know if I do print them out and do them, or if I just have everything online so it's easier to grade. I don't know. I have people, does everybody have laptops and just tell them?
Do it
online. Yeah. Yeah, so I think I'm just gonna have everybody come here. Unless you can't be here that day, then we're gonna just have to do it some other time or something.
Good thing my journey duty isn't until next 2 months.
Yeah, so I think I'm just gonna have it in class and do that. I just haven't, I'm just not used to this new Blackboard site, so I gotta figure out. Yeah, so I'll figure that out, but I'm thinking in class. It'll only take, an hour type of exam.